We had so much fun doing our founder origin story series over the summer because it, I think, led to some longer and more in-depth conversations. So we decided to do a new series for this fall, and it won't be as long, but it's a series on co-founder relationships. And it's one of the things that we get a lot of questions about and can cause a lot of conflict for founders, but is also something that can be tremendously beneficial and important to the success of a startup.
Right. A co-founder relationship is so similar to a marriage that it's often used as the analogy. And with how much information has been written about and talked about marriages over the past 5 or 10 decades, it's probably time to start thinking about doing this for co-founder relationships, because they are equally as complex and there are so many moving parts. And there are so many relationships of co-founders that wind up going bad that we kind of wanted to just take a first look at it and see what these relationships look like and how they play out in some of the prominent founders that we know.
So we've reached out to some folks that we know, a couple of whom have really successful co-founder relationships, and then at least one who had it really fall apart and go badly. So we're going to share a variety of different stories through an interview format, and then we'll probably wrap up the series at the end and do some reflections about what we learned from the conversations as a whole and kind of our takeaways from the series.
And so we're kicking off this series by interviewing Ian Schoen, and he's co-founder with Dan Andrews of several businesses. Most notably, if you're a podcast listener, you've probably heard of the Tropical MBA podcast, formerly known as the Lifestyle Business Podcast. And so Dan and Ian started this podcast, I would guess maybe 6 years ago. And they also started several product companies, physical product companies, where they would design and manufacture things like portable bars or valet podiums or cat furniture. So they had, you know, they're in some niches, but they grew all of these businesses themselves together as co-founders and recently exited from the physical product businesses. And now they're doubling down, as far as I know, on their kind of their membership website called the Dynamite Circle and their conferences. They do something called the DCBKK in Bangkok. And then they have their audience through their podcast. And so a lot of us have had maybe an outside look at their partnership over the past several years as they've talked about it, shared about it on the podcast. And they've also discussed a few times about what the co-founder relationships looks like for them. But we really wanted to bring Ian on to kind of dive a little deeper into that and ask some specific questions with the thought of finding out more about how these relationships work.
And Ian and I have a great conversation about some of the nuts and bolts that go into making their partnership successful. But I think more generally, the philosophy with which he and Dan approach their relationship, the level of trust and commitment and respect that has made their relationship really successful. So we're grateful that Ian took the time and hope that this is an interesting conversation for you all to hear.
Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. I'm Rob, the founder.
And I'm Sherry, the clinical psychologist. And we've come together to help founders and their families stay sane while starting up.
Each week, we'll talk about different ways to work well, stay emotionally and physically healthy, and stay connected to the people that you care about.
So if you would just begin by saying how you and Dan met, and then maybe a brief overview of the kind of businesses that you do together for people who are not familiar with your work.
Yeah, sure. So Dan and I met, I think, back in 2006. We were both living in California, and he was actually my boss. So he was the VP of the company, and I was a designer. And so, you know, at first, I guess our relationship, you know, he was my boss, so, but we were kind of the same age. I lured him into the bar for a couple of drinks and we started to become friends. So I think definitely before we were partners, we were friends. Yeah. And the businesses that we owned together, well, we just sold the first one that we started together. That was a product design and manufacturing business. And the other one that we own together is the Dynamite Circle Tropical MBA. So it's a membership site for entrepreneurs. And then the Tropical MBA is where we do our podcast.
And how did you decide that you wanted to work together? Because you have a pretty tight-knit partnership. You do a lot of work together. You've lived together. You've traveled together.
Yeah. We've done a lot of things together. Some probably not worth disclosing on this podcast. You know, in the beginning, I'm trying to think back, but I think we both kind of realized that we wanted some kind of partnership And neither of us was, I guess, super confident in our ability to go forward with this business thing together. And not only that, it was just fun. So I remember when we first started our business, working late nights, working on the weekends, it was a fun activity to do together. So, you know, and we were much younger then. So, and we had a lot more free time. But yeah, I think first for us, we wanted to do this because it was fun and because we thought that we could change our lives. And we thought, you know, changing our lives together might be fun too. So, you know, not so dissimilar to being in a relationship, you know, with a partner, whether it be like your spouse or significant other, you know, it was like, hey, this is a fun way to live life together. And we just happen to be doing business and creating income.
You really genuinely enjoyed each other's company.
Yeah.
And just liked those long hours together and managed to have some mischief as well as get some real work done, it sounds like.
Totally. Yeah. I think it's, I think it would be very different, you know, if we met today and we started a partnership. I think being friends with your partner is very important on some levels. I mean, it seemed to have worked out for me. I do see partnerships that work well where people aren't friends. They just kind of come together to collaborate on what they need to accomplish in the business. And I see that being very successful too in some instances. But I think for me, the friendship aspect has really been fun, maybe more than it's been beneficial.
Hmm. You mentioned that neither of you felt quite confident that you would be able to be successful had you done something like this on your own. What does Dan bring to you? What do you bring to Dan? How do you kind of become the complete package now that you're working together?
That's a good question. I think in the beginning, it was probably different than it is now. And our roles are kind of always evolving. So in the beginning, it was the distinction was very easy. So we had a product business and I was a designer. Dan was kind of the business guy. And actually, our roles have somewhat reversed in recent years. But in the beginning, you know, Dan was kind of the spreadsheet guy and kind of the this is how we get it done guy. And I was the guy that does designs and, you know, drinks vermouth and hangs out by the candlelight.
You were the moody artistic one.
Yeah, exactly. But our roles were a lot easier then because we had just come out of college and, like, you know, it was like, hey, this is my skill set. Like, I'm a designer. And Dan was like, well, I'm this business guy. And so it was very easy because we had these identities and they seemed somewhat permanent at the time, I guess. And then as our business evolved, you know, we had to fill other shoes and we had to figure out how to get other things done. You know, things come up like, well, who's going to do customer service or who's going to design the web page and things like that we didn't have the skill sets for. And so, you know, either we had to hire for that or we had to become that person. And so our roles have kind of evolved and changed. And I think, you know, here we are 7-8 years in. I think for me in terms, and I'll speak for myself, I think for me, I still identify as a designer, but I identify more as an entrepreneur / business person. And I think in terms of the way that our relationship works today, you know, we have a bunch of people that are working for us now, actually less now that we've sold the company, but we still got a few people working for us and in our current ventures. And it's our job to kind of see the people that work with us in our business become successful and help us grow this business. And so more advisors today than I'd say like designers, if that makes sense.
Hmm. Yeah. So your roles have changed over time and it sounds like both of your skill sets have gotten wider as you've needed to flex and take on more tasks.
Yeah.
But experience has also changed the kinds of things that you do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in terms of what we have to do and what we do, I think one of the things that comes up, I guess, with founders is that, and partners especially, is that when you're in a relationship like Dan and I are in, you know, there's two of us. And so you kind of have to divide and conquer, but you also have to figure out where you want to come together to collaborate. And that's a really special time because when you're off doing your own thing, like, it doesn't make sense to have two people looking at spreadsheets. And I've kind of been identified and I kind of enjoy that aspect of the business, kind of taking care of a lot of the administrative things and the spreadsheet, everything financial. That's me. I've identified with it like I did when I was a designer and I feel like I'm good at it. And so it doesn't make sense to have both people kind of working on things like that. But at the same time, Dan is the guy that puts a lot of the creative energy behind the podcast. And he's a guy that took on the burden of understanding the technology there and figuring out a way to make a great business podcast. And so I kind of stay out of the way there. But then when it's time to come together, that's a really important time for us because he's got all this expertise. He shares it with me and then I get to come in and bring whatever I have to the equation. And so it's one of these things where I think we both mutually benefit from each other's expertise. And then when we come together, it's special because I get to learn everything that he's gone off and learned and then know some of that and then collaborate with him to make hopefully a better product in the end. Does that make a lot of sense?
Yeah. I mean, and it's sort of like a Venn diagram. There's Ian and your expertise and your experience. There's Dan, but then there's the ways in which you overlap and how there's this sort of new thing that's created by the cohesion between the two of you.
Yeah. We're very much interested in what each other is doing. You know, he doesn't just say like, get that done over there with that spreadsheet. I'll go and kind of get it done and figure it out. And we'll come together and I'll explain to him how it happened. So we both have a very good working understanding, I think, of what each other is doing. Neither of us are working in the dark. And I think that's one of the benefits of the partnership is I think you can get in these partnerships and it can be very lonely because you're working by yourselves. And then it's like, well, when is it a really appropriate time to come together? Because we essentially have our own jobs within this company. And so for us, I think we make a point at least once or twice a week of coming together, talking about what each other is doing and figuring out, you know, hey, I think that's a good idea. That's a bad idea. Well, I can take this on. What do you think we should do about this team member that we're working with? And so there's a lot of collaboration that goes on and we each know what each other is working on pretty much all the time.
So there's a lot of communication between the two of you in addition to a lot of trust and respect, it sounds like.
I think one of the things actually that I've really benefited from in the relationship is, yeah, learning how to communicate. I'd say I was not an expert communicator when I was in my mid-20s. I don't know how common that is.
I don't think you're alone in that.
Yeah, I was not a very good communicator, I'd say. And so what the partnership definitely, one of the benefits of the partnership is it definitely forced me to be a better communicator. And it also forced me to make visible my work and to make visible kind of my thought process. And I think actually that's one of the things that I try to teach, you know, our more junior team members is like, hey, try and get your work visible so everybody can see what's going on so we can all collaborate and help. And definitely, I think the partnership and that accountability has made me become a better communicator in that way.
How have you formalized your relationship?
I'm trying to think if we've ever kissed. I know that we've hugged a lot.
That's consummation. That's different. Okay. I mean, have you sat with lawyers and kind of divvied up? Like, do you have a prenup, basically? If this goes bad, do you have a system for how to dissolve the partnership or how to determine whose is what's and those kinds of things?
Sure. Yeah. So to be completely honest, like for a long time, our partnership documents were not very good. And, you know, I think the thing with Dan and I is that because we became friends first, there's a huge amount of trust in our relationship. And trust is funny because when you die, you know, or something awful happens, you know, the people around you that are responsible for that contract, you know, they might not understand your trust. And so that's why I think that you need these contracts more than anything, especially in Dan and my situation, because I do think that ultimately, you know, by the time it gets to the lawyers and everything like that, let's just say you have a conflict. By the time it gets there, you know, the trust has eroded. And so, you know, I don't think it's likely that you're going to be able to salvage a relationship once it gets to that point. So
like the documents aren't going to protect you from something going wrong in the relationship, but they're a worst case scenario situation.
They are a worst case scenario. And so I think I wouldn't say one of the reasons we haven't created the strongest documents in the past, but I guess it is because we have a large amount of trust for each other. So this is all to say, in the beginning, we didn't have great documents. Our documents are starting to become more sophisticated, not because there's less trust in our relationship, but because we understand more about the potential possibilities of what might happen. So death and dismemberment, that's one thing. But then also, you know, we each have our own kind of legal responsibilities now. And so that's why these documents are becoming more sophisticated because we understand a lot more about the downside. And, you know, we've been in business 8 or 9 years now. And so there's the potential for much more loss. And so in the beginning, I think I was just talking actually last week with a peer of mine and he's starting a business and he's got a partnership. And these guys went like back and forth for like almost a year on what their partnership structure would look like. And he told me, he said, look, like during this process, it almost broke up the relationship and derailed everything we were trying to work towards, because we're trying to formalize too much of this process in the beginning. And we didn't even hardly have a product. You know, they're making only a little bit of money. And so I think maybe we just got lucky because we're so naive in the beginning, but we didn't focus so much about counting every bean and making sure everything was in order. We were just like, hey, we want to change our lives, so we're going to go forward with this. Again, I think that part of that was being naive and dumb. But in the case of the guy that I was just explaining to you about, you know, it almost ripped this partnership apart because they were so concerned with the details of their partnership.
Like too much energy on planning for the disillusion and planning for it to break apart.
Totally. Totally. And one of the things that Dan and I talk about a lot is planning for success in these partnerships. So I think that that's probably the most important, is to plan for success.
How have you managed conflicts between the two of you? I assume that over the course of your 8-9 year professional marriage, there have been some big conflicts. How have you sorted those out?
I wouldn't actually say big. So I'd say that there's been a couple conflicts, you know, one or two heated debates, but for the most part, we've been pretty even keel. You know, I think you can, I'm not married, but you are. So you can probably chime in here and give me your thoughts. But one of the things that I think in terms of these relationships and conflicts is that you really have to take the long view. So you can't go into an argument trying to blow things up, because if you really picture yourself with this person 10 years from now, that's a very destructive. So every time we get into a debate or an argument, you know, you kind of have to envision the future together. And so you don't want to do anything that's going to paralyze that. And that doesn't mean not telling each other the truth. That doesn't mean not expressing all of your feelings. That means not destroying the relationship in the process and trying to be as respectful as you can of the other person. Does that make sense to you? Is that something?
Oh,
that
I think that's perfect. Yeah, because you're not trying to sacrifice the relationship over the argument about where you go to dinner or how you host your next DC event. It's just, right. I think that long view is very important to conceptualize having a relationship with this person in the future that really is not worth damaging over the particular point of debate right now.
Yeah. And there's very few arguments or discussions that you can imagine in a relationship that would be kind of a pivot point of that partnership not going forward. So it's like, there's not so many decisions in our business that we've made that would say that we're not going to be in business in the future that are almost worth killing each other over, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I know people ask you for advice all the time, but what are some words of advice that you give to people around partnerships or how to set up a partnership well for those who are maybe beginning in their business ventures?
Well, I think like I kind of talked about before, I think that there's a lot of different kinds of partnerships, but the two that I see that are the most successful are the kind of partnerships, the first kind, which isn't necessarily what Dan and I are, which is like we're on opposite sides of the spectrum in terms of our skill sets, and we weren't friends and we've come together to kind of accomplish this one goal. I see those partnerships being successful a lot of times, especially if they're just coming together to work on certain projects, or if they're like shorter term business problems. So, you know, a couple months or a couple years, hey, let's get together. Our life trajectories don't have to be going the exact same way. We don't have to have the exact same idea about money and all this stuff. Like, we just want to come together, accomplish this one goal, and then probably split up. I see that those relationships, as long as there's, again, a lot of mutual trust going on, I see that those relationships can work well. And then the other type of relationship, which Dan and I have, is like kind of this friends relationship, tons of mutual respect, come together for the long run, work on a bunch of different interesting projects together, kind of like a marriage model. And so those are kind of the two categories that I see people being successful in. I think in terms of advice, you got to ask yourself why you come in together in a partnership. And there's a lot of wrong reasons to come together in a partnership. So one of the reasons that I think could be potentially wrong, and this is a part of the basis of our relationship, is loneliness. So if you're just trying to get together, I'm kind of lonely. He's kind of lonely. She's kind of lonely. We want to get together so we're not both lonely in this business. I think sometimes that spells recipe for disaster, because you become not lonely at some point and now you're in this relationship and maybe there's a third wheel, something like that. So
loneliness, bad reason to come together.
Right. Loneliness is a bad reason to come together.
What about fear? I mean, I think sometimes people come into partnerships because they're trying to minimize risk.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure the partnerships really accomplish that.
Yeah, and a lot of times they don't. So in terms of the fear, I think it's like pretty natural to be concerned, especially if it's your first or second venture, to be, you know, I want to be in this with somebody. But yeah, I think you really have to ask yourself what you both bring to the table and make sure that it's complementary for the kind of business or venture that you're starting. So in terms of like partnerships, I think one of the things that Dan and I try and do on a daily basis, like I was saying, is communicate really well. And so I think a lot of partners fail because of this communication thing. And I think it's worth talking about here for another minute, because when I'm thinking about the basis of any good relationship, it's about communication. And so I think trying to figure out a way to foster the best types of communication and figuring out people that you communicate well with is really important. So, I mean, I guess for you, Sherry, like how does it work in your relationship with Rob? Do you feel like you understand the way each other communicates 100%?
I wouldn't say 100%, but certainly we've had a lot of time to practice. And we also have different rhythms of communication. We have kind of a formal Sunday night meeting that's the logistics meeting for the family for the week. That's a practice that we developed because we need to communicate about the nuts and bolts. And then we have obviously the sort of day-to-day breakfast, dinner, bedtime conversations that are less formal, but an exchange of ideas and updates on sort of what's going on in life. So I think communication is always unfolding, and it's always something that has to be kind of intentionally practiced. I don't think that two people, even in a great business partnership or a great marriage, have it nailed, and it has to shift according to the different variables that are going on in life.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point that you bring up in the pre-planned communication time. For me and Dan, it's generally like a Sunday evening kind of thing. We'll like get together and we'll kind of talk about what happened that week and what's going forward. So I think you're right though to say like it makes sense to have formal time and then not so formal time where you're just pinging each other and sure. Saying, hey, what's going on?
You have that combination of both formal time and informal hangout friend communication.
Yeah, like I said, the more I talk to people that are married, the more I feel like I might be married.
I think you are. I don't know. How does your girlfriend feel about that?
I think that she's all right with it.
I mean, that's actually kind of a real question in the sense that you two started this partnership when you were in one phase of life, when you kind of were each other's best friend and partner. Now you're in a different phase of life. Time has gone by and you're in different relationships and have different kind of pulls on your commitment level and time. How has that changed as you've matured? Has that been okay? Or has that been something to kind of renegotiate too?
You know, we both have significant others right now. So it's never really been an issue. You know, I think one of the things, like with all relationships, you're kind of a little bit more hot and heavy in the beginning. And a lot of times you're, again, back to communication, you're not as efficient with your communication. So you have to spend more time together to kind of understand what each other is thinking. And, you know, now that we're like years and years into this thing, like there's enough room for another person. So I think it would have been more difficult in the beginning if we both had serious relationships and we had this business relationship, because I just look back to how much time went into all those relationships. And so I guess I'm lucky that it didn't all happen at the same time. But now I feel like we're much more efficient in the way that we communicate with each other. So it's not as big of a deal. So we just exited from our product design business, and that was a long journey. It took almost 18 months to sell that company. And so that's great. One of the reasons I think it's worth mentioning on the show here why we sold that company is because we weren't collaborating on it. So I had gotten to the point that was kind of my baby. So we started it together for the first couple of years. Dan and I worked on that company. And then it got to the point where, you know, I became more interested and Dan became less interested, and he started something else and I continued to work on this business. So we're kind of dividing and conquering, but it made it so that business specifically that we didn't collaborate as much. And so when we decided to sell for many different reasons, but one of the main reasons we decided to sell that business is because we weren't collaborating on it anymore. And so it wasn't so much a disastrous problem as it was like, hey, we want to work together more. And we can't do that in this business because I've identified myself as the guy that runs this business. And so one thing that I guess I wouldn't have foreseen as being a reason to sell a business is that everything is going well with your partnership, but you're not working together on something. So we wanted to be able to come together. And so I think in the future, come together more. So in the future, we're going to be working on more businesses that take each other's skill sets, kind of like in the beginning of the business that we just sold. So we're identifying, we're in the phase right now where we're identifying new opportunities. And one of the things that we're sitting down and doing is trying to figure out what we can both work on together for the next 5 years, because it's very difficult to try and plan that out. So it's like, hey, we're both interested in this for the first, I can see the first 1 or 2 years, but what happens when it turns into another business like the one we just sold and I started running that? Like, how do we both stay involved for the long term? And so I think, you know, through that sale and through what we've been doing the last 8 years or so, we've kind of learned more and more about each other and our skill sets. And so our next venture is definitely, this is a long way to say, like our next venture, I definitely want to try and figure out a business that we can both kind of co-run together.
I mean, that's really significant that the health and well-being of the partnership and even the pleasure of it, the fun of being able to work together and collaborate is something that really has shaped the business decisions that you're making, both in terms of selling the original product, but now in terms of not only your personal goals or Dan's personal goals, but the goal of the shared entity, the goal of the partnership together.
Yeah. And if you look at the spreadsheet, some people would say that's a dumb decision. And it might be, it's definitely not the smartest financial decision, I'll tell you that. But in terms of like for health and well-being, like, you know, it feels right. It feels right. So I think that, you know, sometimes you can't concentrate so much on the numbers because, yeah, I promise you it's not the smartest financial decision to go down that path.
But that's not the only metric to satisfaction or well-being in your life, obviously.
Right. Yeah. So. And that's why I think that, you know, all of us start these kinds of businesses because we're interested, these bootstrap businesses, I should say specifically, because we're interested in a multitude of currencies.
Yeah.
And not just the financial aspect.
Freedom. Connection, relational health, all those things
yeah.
that matter right along with that bottom line.
So. Absolutely.
Well, cool. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me about this.
Sure. Yeah. Next time, hopefully we can talk about my other relationship.
Anytime.
It probably needs more work than this one. So that's probably good.
Anytime. Yeah. And I hope we find ourselves in the same city again sometime soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder.
We'll be back next week with another conversation about how to enjoy a little bit more Zen in your startup life.